This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 156, and I am your host, Simon Bowne. This week I'm talking to Justin Bush about his book, Violence Will Not Be Tolerated, an alien abduction story. Justin has experienced multiple alien abductions throughout his life, and last time he was on the podcast, I had so many questions left over for him that I invited him back. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 140 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. Hi, Justin. Thanks a lot for coming back to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
So we're talking about your book, Violence Will Not Be Tolerated, an alien abduction story. One of the things I always enjoy finding out about, if there's anything you would call high strangeness, and it's like, what, being abducted by aliens isn't strange enough, but was there anything that was like really beyond?
Oh, sure. Yeah, many times. In fact, I noticed high strangeness when I was younger, way before I had like the UFO encounters and things like that. There was a time when my mother brought me and my older brother home from the grocery store. And she came in, she put the groceries away. I was sitting on the floor of the kitchen. My older brother went back to his bedroom. He was 2 years older than me, so he ran away, and I was just sitting there. And my mom said, I'll be right back. I'm going to put my purse down. She walked down the hallway and sat her purse on the bed. And she turned around and walked back. And when she did, there was almost like a structure, like a kind of like a pyramid or, like a stack of all the groceries she had just bought and put away. She put them in the freezer, in the fridge, in the cupboards, and the cupboards were open and I wasn't paying attention. So she was like, did you do this? And I looked up and saw it. And she was like, she was looking around. She was like, there's no way you could get up there that fast. So she yelled at my brother and was like, hey, did you do this? And he was like, I'm in the bathroom. And she was like, what the heck? That happened three times. It happened twice with my mother. Two times, same thing. Comes home, she puts the groceries away. Same thing happened two times. And then on about 10 years later, me and my younger brother were playing video games. He had to leave for work. So he left. He was a young teenager or whatever. And I went back to my bedroom. I said goodbye to him in the living room and turned around. And before I could even get inside my bedroom, I heard my stepmother yelling. And she was like, hey, who did this? And I was like, what is she talking about? So I came out there and she's like, did you do this? And I was like, what? And when I looked around the counter, right there on the kitchen floor was a stack, like a pyramid, like a structure of cans from the cupboards. And I was like, no. And I was like, how the heck did that happen? It happened so fast. I mean, within 30 seconds. And my brother had left. I watched him leave. And she came home on a break. And she was like, well, put him away or get rid of him or something. Maybe one of your brothers did it or something. I was like, nobody's here. It's just me. So I've seen that same thing happen three times and it happens so fast and it's such a strange phenomenon. It doesn't make any sense. It's almost like somebody can move so fast that they can do this sort of thing without being even recognized. Like, but it's just within seconds. It's a very strange thing. I never got to the bottom of it. My mom thought it was weird. My stepmom thought it was weird. But it's just one of those things you kind of brush off because you have there's no logical explanation for it.
It almost sounds like poltergeist or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's that stuff. I mean, I've had, there's been all sorts of stuff. If you ever, some of the high strangeness, like synchronicities, there was a time that my life was saved. I was probably 16 and I came up to an intersection. And I stopped and then there was no one there. And when I started to go, there was like this female voice that I heard in my head yelled, like screamed at me to stop. And I slammed on the brakes. There was nobody around. It was nighttime. And this truck, this big lifted truck, came by over 100 miles an hour straight through the intersection. So I've had stuff like that. I've had premonitions. I had a premonition about a year before it happened. We've had some stuff. I know my girlfriend had an encounter. We were having close encounters. She didn't believe in UFOs or aliens or anything. And she had one of these, she calls it an alien, but she had one of these creatures come up to her during the daytime. And she said it was like her whole body shut down. She was filled with fear. She said it was just debilitating fear. And she said she's never had an encounter like that before. So we've had some high strangeness. We've had, orbs, poltergeist-like activity. I don't know how related it is, and I don't know if there is a relation. You know, we may be experiencing a multitude of phenomena that is only, the only connection might be our own observations, if that makes sense. Like, we're measuring everything through a human lens. So it may not be that poltergeist activity may have absolutely nothing to do with the flying object I saw 3 years later. I honestly don't know. I can't explain any of it, but lots of synchronicities. I mean, there was a time I was with my friends and we walked like several miles, and we used to walk all the time when we were like 12, 13, 14, and we were almost where we were going. And in the middle of the road, we were walking down the side of the road. I just got this bad feeling. I got this terrible feeling something bad was about to happen. So I just told my friends, I was like, I'm going. And they were like, what are you talking? We're almost there. We just walked for an hour, 2 hours, something, you know? And they're like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I'm leaving. And they were like, that's great. They tried to argue with me, and I just turn around and walk away. And the next day, I don't want to tell you what happened, but the next day my buddy was like, why do you do that? And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, you leave every time something bad happens. And he was like, you've done it constantly. And I was like, no, I don't. And he was like, oh yeah. And he started naming them on his fingers. He was like, when this happened, right before that happened, right before. And I said, well, yeah, but that's just because I have a bad feeling. And he was like, that's not normal. Like, he was the first person in my entire life to point it out, that there was something. It was almost like I was anticipating some, you know, thing happening in the future. It's happened multiple times. I don't want to talk about that one specifically because it's not my story to tell, but it's just multiple times it's happened. It happened last night, actually. All right. So last night I went to go throw the trash out, and we have a big dumpster or whatever. So I went through the trash out, and when I was walking back, I stopped because there was a bunch of planes everywhere, and it's just abnormal to see that many airplanes. So I stopped and was looking at the sky and just watching them fly around. And I was like, man, we really do have an increased air traffic here for some reason, because I skywatch, so I notice these differences. And anyway, as I was looking at the sky, I was like, the power is going to go out. I was like, why would the power go out? And I had this kind of, I don't know what you'd want to call it, but it was in my mind, right as soon as I said that, like, the power is going to go out. And I was like, but why would it go out? You know, when you have these premonitions or whatever you want to call them, your very next question is why. You know, it's like, I don't know, it's almost like you can't help yourself. But when I asked myself why, I saw that there was this AI. There was like you might call it like a secret cyber war. And it was battling AIs. They're using these AI systems to infiltrate communications, energy systems, international trade banking systems. So there's multiple groups out there that have invented these AI that are essentially unleashing them in this kind of electronic warfare behind the scenes that everyday people are not aware of. And it's AI will infiltrate, turn off a system, and they're using another AI to defend themselves. So they're using the second AI to try to figure out what the first AI did and repair the damage. And so I thought about this for a few seconds, and I turned around and went inside. And as soon as I got inside, all the power went out for a little bit, and then it came back on. And I was like, you know, those sorts of moments happen. They're not regular. I would say they happen once every blue moon. It happened 2 or 3 years ago with my girlfriend, and I were at home, and she asked me if I want to go to the store with her. And I said, no, we're just going to get stopped by the police. And she was like, why would we get stopped by the police? And I was like, I don't know. We're just going to get stopped by the police. And she was like, that's insane. That we're not going to get stopped by the police. And I was like, all right. And she was like, come on, just come with me. And I was like, all right, whatever. And so we were driving to the store. She turned into the store. Police officer turned in behind her. And I said, they're going to pull you over. And she was like, why? We haven't done anything wrong. And I was like, I don't know. They're just going to pull you over. And she pulled in into the store, and she needed to get air in her tires. And there was a person using it. So she went across the street. She went around the parking lot, went across the street to the other place where they have air. And the police officer pulled her over. And she was like, what the heck? And the cop came up, and she rolled down her window, and he said, you haven't done anything wrong. You haven't broken any laws or anything. I just want to see what you were doing. And she was like, what? Like, and he was like, yeah, I just want to see what you were doing. And then they talked or whatever, and he left. But it was just such a, I mean, when you talk about high strangeness, you know, it was such a strange moment. And, he got her ID, checked her ID and all that stuff, and then led us on our way. But, I saw that happening a half hour, 45 minutes before it happened. And she was like, oh, that's insane. You know, that's not going to happen. You know, there's no reason to pull us over, stuff like that. She's done that a few times. She's done that with the abduction before we got abducted. I was like, don't go outside. They're out there. And she's like, there's nobody out there. And then she goes right outside. That's happened a few times where I'm like, you know, I told her one time, I said, there's something on the roof. It's walking around on the roof of our house. And she was like, no, it's probably the wind, something like that. And then I said, listen, I want to get some sleep. And I said, and I can't sleep with this, whatever this thing is walking on our roof. I was like, can you just stay up and, you know, so I feel comfortable. And she was like, yeah. So I fell asleep. The next day she woke me up. She said, 5 minutes after I fell asleep, because I was so tired, I was exhausted, and I was scared we were going to get abducted again. So I was like, I just need somebody to sit with me while I close my, I just felt so uncomfortable to fall asleep because you feel so vulnerable, especially when you have something walking around outside in the middle of the night. So, but anyway, she said she woke me up the next morning and said, 5 minutes after you fell asleep, she said there was this loud bang right outside the bedroom window. And she said, when she went to go look out the window, she had this overwhelming feeling that if she opened the window to look outside, there would be she described it as something like a terrifying old man looking down at her. Something, a scary old man, or she said she had this feeling that if she opened that window, there would be a scary old man looking down at her. And I was like, well, what did you do? And she said, I put my headphones on and just turned my back, and because she got scared. But yeah, I've had these kind of, I don't know what you want to call them. I think it's instinct. I think we all might have it because I've seen other people have it too. I don't think it's some super ability or something. I think we've evolved to have that sort of sixth sense. And when people ask me, you know, like, what does it feel like? If you've ever been sitting in class, like math class or something, and you have that overwhelming feeling that somebody's staring at you, and you turn around and, you know, the principal is standing in the door of the room or whatever, you know, it's like that. It's like this little feeling of maybe there's somebody watching you, or there. I think that's just the best way to describe it. Like, it's like almost like anticipation or excitement for something that's about to happen. The furthest one I've ever had, the furthest premonition I've ever had was about a year. Well, that's not exactly true. I've had some a few years ago that are like horrifying, that haven't come true yet. If they ever come true, and I don't really talk about them too much. But the furthest one that I've ever had that came true was about a year when I was 20 years old. I had this dream. I was asleep. I had this extremely vivid dream, just like just like what I'm seeing and feeling right now. It was that real. I've never had a dream that real before. And so when I woke up, I was like, oh, that's weird. And it was so freaky that I decided to look up. I started studying dreams because I'd never had an experience like that before. And so I was looking into dream interpretation. What do dreams mean? Like, how do we dream? You know, what's, you know, how can our brain make something? Because normally your dreams are crazy. You know, they're, you know, you walk in a door and it turns into a circus on the other side, and there's somebody you haven't seen in 20 years. And the normally dreams are so chaotic, but this was just like I was watching a memory. It was even worse than that. It was like I was living a memory that hadn't happened yet. And in the dream, I was at my father's house, and my father and I have we don't have a great relationship. I had moved out when I was a teenager. I hadn't lived with him in years. And in the dream, I was in my father's house, and I had a tooth that was broken, and it got infected, and I was in so much pain, and I was pacing around in the living room of my father's house, and I went around to the kitchen sink, and I turned the water on, dripping the water, and I grabbed a pair of pliers, and I was trying to pull my tooth out. It was one of my molars, and I when I tried to pull it out, it broke. And I couldn't get the pliers to grab onto it anymore because it was just the base of the tooth. So now I've just got this exposed roots of my tooth, and I'm just in major pain. And my father comes out and starts yelling at me. We get in an argument, and then he turns around and leaves, goes back to his bedroom. And I'm sitting there like up against the sink in so much pain. And I look over. There's a kitchen strainer, and there's a single knife in that strainer. It's a small paring knife, and it's just sitting there by itself. And I see it, and I grab it, and I put it in my mouth, and I just hit it up against the tooth. And then I reach in with the pliers, and I start pulling the tooth out, and the tooth comes out, and I'm just overwhelmed with this sense of relief. And as I'm dropping these pieces into the sink, the blood is dripping out of my mouth. And because the water is running, it's swirling around the drain. So when I woke up that day, it was such a vivid dream. But I was like, there's no way that's going to happen, because I told myself once I moved out of my dad's house, I would never live there again, you know? And I was like, there's no way that, you know, so I had to understand it. And I researched and I never got any answers. I never got any sort of answers. And then about a year later, I ended up moving back into my dad's temporarily. And that it happened. I broke my tooth. I didn't have enough money to get it pulled, so it got infected, and I was in an amazing amount of pain. It happened just as I dreamed, exactly the same. And when it came time for me to use the knife, right, That's when I realized I was in the dream. So I tried to pull it out. It broke. My dad came out. He, you know, we had this little argument. He left. I'm sitting there in pain. And then as I'm looking down at the blood dripping into the sink, it hit me. I was like, oh my God, I'm in the dream. And I realized I was reliving the exact same thing over again. And that's when I looked over at the knife, because I was struggling to get the tooth pulled and I couldn't get it out and it broke. And I was in so much pain. I didn't know what to do. And the moment I realized I was in the dream, I saw the knife and I took it. And what I did was I used it to break the roots apart. So I broke the base of the tooth, and it just gave me enough room to put some pliers in to pull each root out by itself. And it freaked me out so much that once I got the tooth out, and once, you know, I washed my mouth, I watched the blood swirl down the drain and all that, I went outside and sat on the front step. And I sat there and I thought about what happened for probably 2 hours. And I was like, how, you know, did I dream of the future? Or, you know, like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, did I have a premonition of something that was going to happen in the future? Because I don't think I would have known to use the knife. Like, I was struggling, and that dream that happened a year before was the last thing on my mind at the time. It was only because I remembered it that I grabbed the knife. I don't think I would have thought about it on my own. And I don't know if I dreamed the future or if the dream made it happen. I don't know where that came from. And same thing with when I almost died, when I almost got in that car accident. I don't know where that voice came from. It wasn't my voice. It was a woman's voice. And, you know, I don't know where these little hints of intuition are coming from.
What it reminds me of is something you said in the book, where you said your dad said they were demons and your mom said they were guardian angels. You know, It's like you didn't crash because there was a guardian angel there or a spirit guide or something.
I mean, something. It was some, you know, because I know these creatures use telepathy. Even I was telling you about my girlfriend meeting that she called it an alien. You know, it used some sort of telepathy. There was something there. You know, for all I know, there could have been some woman 1,000 miles away sending me, or from another dimension or another, you know, I don't know. But my father, I think he, you know, when you view these things, you view them through whatever lens that you have. Everybody views these things through their own lens. You know, my mom and dad were raised fairly religious. My father thought that they were demons. And my mother thought that they were angels. And the reason is because, you know, my father, I'll give you an example. Me and my father were driving, and a UFO was hovering in a field. You know, we were driving and we saw this thing, and it didn't belong. It shouldn't have been there. My grandfather farmed this property. So when we saw it, when we were driving down the road and the farm is on the one side of the road, my father stopped because it doesn't belong and he doesn't know who it is. You know, he assumed maybe somebody was out there that shouldn't be out there or something like that. So when he stopped, this UFO came up to us. It flew about 15 feet away. It shined this very bright light into his truck, like a yellow laser-like light, and it landed maybe 15, 20 feet away from his truck. A door opened up. Three of these creatures came out. One of them came to my side and two came to his side, and they took him inside the craft. Whatever they did to him in that craft, and I assume they did something similar to what they've done to me, you know, throughout the years. But whatever they did to him terrified him. It completely, you know, changed, you know, how he acts and responds and things like that. So it scared him to death. it didn't scare me that bad. That instance, you know, it wasn't that bad. I've had worse encounters. But then, you know, they let him go and they lift up and they fly across the field and they, you know, they leave. And that's that. But that really scared him. So he, you know, the only thing he could equate them to, their technology and, you know, was demons, some sort of, you know, demonic force. Whereas my mother, she said when I was a kid, we had my older brother would sleep with them until, you know, he was like 2 years old, but he was sleeping in bed with them and stuff like that. And I was just a baby in a crib in the nursery. And so my mother said that in the middle of the night, I would start crying and she would come down the hallway and turn the corner into the bedroom. And she said there would be a woman standing there with like a long white kind of robe or gown, dark hair. And she said she would be either standing over my crib watching me, or she would be sitting in the rocking chair next to it. And my mother said every single time she turned the corner, she would see this woman. The woman would like fade out, disappear right in front of her. And she said that she always thought maybe it was some sort of guardian angel looking out for me. So I think, you know, my dad had a negative experience and that scared him. And so demons is the way that he, you know, if you ask my father, like, did you see a spaceship, whatever, he'll tell you yes, you know. But if you ask him, like, did you see a gray alien, he'll say, no, they're demons. And I think that's just because of the negative experience he had. And my mother, I think she just didn't have that many negative experiences. She, you know, she had more positive experiences with whatever this phenomenon is. But I will tell you, my father saw that woman, I call her the lady in white. My father saw her once in the hallway. And he said he didn't know when he first saw her, he didn't know if it was Jesus or whether it was he said it looked like a woman. But then when he thought back on it, you know, it had long brown hair and this white gown. And he said, you know, I didn't know if maybe it was Jesus or something like that. But he did say it looked like a woman. But he saw it standing in the hallway one night and it really freaked him out. And he ran towards it, chasing it. And it turned the corner in the hallway into the back hallway. And he ran in and was turning on every light, looking behind the doorway, looking. He ransacked the cabinets. And I was there that night when that happened. And I was like, Dad. And he was like, go back to bed. And he's just rummaging through everything, looking, trying to find out, because he was afraid that there's a person in the house hiding. And so he was like really scared, but he walked away. I mean, he couldn't find it. He couldn't find this thing. It disappeared. And he walked away shaking his head. And, you know, maybe he's crazy. Maybe he lost his mind or, you know. But yeah, we've had lots of these types of strange encounters over the years. Don't, you know, they just don't make enough sense that you can really pin down what they are. I like the nuts and bolts craft part of it because, you know, it's something tangible, it's something physical. But when you're talking about high strangeness, you know, people speaking to you from a distance, saving your life. I mean, I know they saved my life that night. I would have died. In fact, I don't usually tell people this, but I know that the driver of that truck was drunk. I know who he was. I know the people in that vehicle. I went to school with them. It's a long story, but he was hammered drunk and he had got this brand new truck as a graduation present from his father. And so he had some friends of his that he picked up and they went to a party and they were hammered and he was trying to show them how, you know, powerful his truck was and stuff. So he was flying over, you know, over 100 miles an hour, and he just didn't remember that there was a stop sign and he flew right through it. I usually don't talk about that because I don't, you know, he was young. I'm not trying to disparage him, you know what I mean? We all do stupid stuff when we're young. But yeah, I mean, I may I don't know if I'll ever know whose voice that was. I don't know if I'll ever know who that lady was. Or, you know, my mother's, she passed away and she never got any answers to what she saw. You know, I'm lucky to even have other witnesses, because if it wasn't for other witnesses, you'd probably go crazy.
You talk about a time when you were with your girlfriend and you both had missing time.
Yeah, that's happened a few of times. The very first time it happened, we were at my father's house, and we drove home. We drove straight home, and we pulled in. It was 9:13 p.m., and we both smoked cigarettes at the time. So she had a job where she had her hours would change, and the next day they had a big job, and she had to be up at 5 in the morning. So we left my father's early. We would normally stay over there till about 10 o'clock. We left about an hour early than we would normally be over there. And so anyway, we drove home, and we pull in. She says, "Listen, I need to get up early." She said, "Let's just smoke a cigarette right now and just go straight to bed." And I was like, "Okay, no problem." She didn't believe in UFOs, aliens. She is one of those squarest people you've ever met when it comes to that type of stuff. Like, she didn't believe in any of it. So we go to the front yard. We light up two cigarettes. It's the perfect night, completely clear sky, not a cloud in the sky. You can see every star. It's beautiful. And we lived out kind of in the country, so you could really see the stars, you know. And that night, She lights her cigarette and she looks up and she says, "I really wish that I'd learned the stars." She said, "When I grew up," she said, "I don't know any of the stars. I don't know any of the constellations." And I said, "When I was a kid, I got this ball with a light in it that you turn off the lights in your bedroom and it would shine the stars on the walls and the ceiling of your room. So you could look at the different constellations, and it had the different constellation names so you could read it on the wall." And so I started pointing out the constellations, like, "Oh, there's the Big Dipper, and there's, you know, that's Orion over there." And as I'm pointing this out, this massive object flies over top of us. I mean, and just as a massive object, I don't know if I've ever seen an object this big before, but it was completely black. It had no lights on it. It had nothing. The only reason you could even tell that this object was in the sky is because as it flew over us, it blocked out every star. So it very slowly flew over top of us. I looked left, I looked right, and I could not see the edge of this object. To me, it looked boomerang shaped. The outline of it, it had a pointed kind of nose. So I think it was a large boomerang. It could have been a triangle, but I think it was boomerang shaped. But anyway, so we're staring up at this thing with our mouths wide open, and then we just black out. And when I first came to, we were standing in relatively the same location. And my first thought was, where did it go? And I saw it. It was a few miles away, but it was so big you could see it above the horizon. You could still see the outline of it. From that distance, you know, from underneath it, it looked like a boomerang. But when it got farther ahead of us, it just looked kind of like a hot dog shape. You know, if you hold a boomerang sideways out in front of you, it just kind of has like a little bit of a hot dog kind of shape, long, elongated, and, you know. So I see it, and then I go, "Where's my cigarette?" And I'm looking at the ground. There's really nowhere for it to have gone, and it's nowhere to be seen. I look over my girlfriend, and she is frozen solid. So she's still staring up at the empty sky. The object's gone. It's gone. It flew away. So she's just like paralyzed, looking in the sky with her mouth open. And so I'm looking for my cigarette, and all of a sudden she snaps out of it and she starts hitting me in my arm. And she was like, "Did you see that? Did you see that?" She was like, "What the," you know, she's cussing, like, "What the F is that thing?" And I was like, "I can't find my cigarette." And she was like, "You probably just smoked it already." And I was like, "No, I didn't." I was like, we just lit them. And she was like, but what about, you know, what about the object? She was like, where did it go? You know, I said it flew away. And she was like, what was that thing? What, you know, she was really ecstatic about the whole thing. And we were really big on not throwing our cigarettes away. So like we had a little cigarette tree, you throw them out in the front of our house. And so she was like, well, I got to get to bed. I got to get up early. So she walks to the front door. She takes her keys out. She goes to reach for a cigarette, but to throw it away. And she's checked her pocket. She's like, I can't find it. She said, I must have dropped it in the yard or something. She was like, I'll come out here and find it tomorrow. And then she opens the front door. And there's a clock right there as soon as she opens the door. And it was 11, I believe it was 11:37. And she said, the power must have gone out. So when the power goes out, the stove resets, the light on the stove. So she said, check your phone. What time is it? And I pull out my phone and I said, it's right, 11:37. And she was like, oh my gosh, I got to get up at 5 a.m. I got to get to sleep, you know. So we walk back there. She slips off her clothes and she's probably asleep in a minute. Easy. I mean, she falls asleep so fast. I've always been envious of her. I have a hard time falling asleep, but she slips into bed and falls right asleep. I laid there for 20, 30 minutes, just staring at the ceiling going, you know, saying like, what was that thing? What was that thing? The next day we talked about it after work. And she was like, I've never seen something that big before, you know? And she kept saying, well, maybe it was the military, you know, maybe she said something like, well, what if it was some sort of military thing and maybe it sprayed something on us and then we passed out, you know? And I was like, where's our cigarettes at? But, you know, and I also, our neighbor was our landlord. I was like, you think our landlord is going to, we're going to stand out in the front yard for 2.5 hours staring up in the sky and our landlord's not going to see it? He's not going to say anything? Like, I think we were taken that night. I think we got abducted. And we just don't remember what happened. But she wasn't ready. At that time, she wasn't ready to believe in UFOs and aliens and stuff like that. She, in fact, the first few times we saw a UFO, we had missing time together. She constantly said, well, maybe it's the government, maybe it's some sort of program or project, you know, secret project. You know, it wasn't until she had a few close encounters that she remembered, you know, what happened. That's when she was like, after one event the next morning, she said, this is real, isn't it? She was like, this is really happening. She was like, this is actually happening. But it took her probably 3 years of having these strange encounters before she finally was like, oh, this is not humans. Like, this is something else. This isn't explainable by, you know, some sort of secret government, you know, spraying chemicals on you or whatever. But yeah, she was really defiant for years until she had a few close encounters. Like that one during the day, that really solidified it. She was scared. She called me immediately and was terrified. She run into this female, she calls it an alien. She said it humanoid during the day, but she freaked out and called me immediately and was like, you know, panicking, like, what the heck is this thing? I've never seen something like this before, you know? And she said she knew immediately it was not a human being, like the telepathic communication, and it really scared her. But yeah, she was defiant for three years at least. She had encounter after encounter. We had missing time multiple times. And she just wouldn't, she just wouldn't even consider that aliens were a possibility for years, like year. It took her a long time before she finally accepted it. I think the nail that, you know, the nail in the coffin was she had an encounter about 6 feet away. I was about eight feet away. There was a disc that came down and hovered outside the window, and it had these big red lights on the side of it. It hovered there about 6 feet away from her. The window was wide open. It was summertime. And then it did a 90 degree rotation on its axis, paused, and then shot away thousands of miles, you know, just in a fraction of a second. And it was completely silent. There was no sonic boom. There was no nothing. I think that was when she was like, okay, this is high, like this is like high technology. This isn't some, you know, airplane or something like that. I think that one was kind of where she went from maybe it's the government to, you know, this is unexplainable. You can't explain these technologies.
Was there a time, I think it was when you were 4 or 5 years old, you just had this spontaneous feeling that you had to go somewhere? I've heard of this before with people who have these experiences.
Yeah, so that's happened a few times. And in fact, when I was older, so one of the things that really bothers people, okay, so I hate talking about this. All right, in 2009, when I got abducted, they telepathically talked to you. And, you know, they told me, you know, not to be violent and they weren't going to hurt me, all this stuff. But they tell you to your face, like, you need to do this. And you say no. And then they say it again. And for some reason, you just do it. You need to take your clothes off. You just do it. Like, imagine a person walking up to you and saying, get naked. And then you don't want to, but your body does it anyway. It's literally like you're a robot and somebody else is controlling you. They have this power to influence people. And even while it's happening to you, I don't know how to explain it, but your consciousness is your own. It's as if they are bypassing your brain or, you know, to control your body, but you can still think on your own. You can still, you know, like be angry at them while they're forcing you to do something. So when I was 4 years old, my mother and father had separated and I was being watched by my grandmother, who was our next door neighbor, and my aunt. So it was my grandmother's house, my aunt's house, my father's sister, and then my dad's house. And so I was at my grandmother's and I asked her if I could go over my aunt's house. And this was common. So she said, sure. And she walked to the front door. She was older and she was not in good health. So she didn't walk me over. She just stood at the front door and watched me walk out. And then once I went around the corner, she went back inside to wash dishes and stuff like that. So I went up to the front door and knocked and nobody answered it. And I waited maybe 2, 3, 4 minutes. The door was locked. My aunt had some health problems. So a lot of times she would sleep in the middle of the day. So anyway, I'm standing there and all of a sudden I got this overwhelming urge to go into the woods. And it wasn't just to go into the woods. It was like, I need to go to where my father and I shot BB guns. So for my brother's birthday, he got him this BB gun and he took me and him out into the woods and we shot it for, I don't know, an hour or whatever. So I got this overwhelming feeling like I need to go there. And I don't know why I did. I just did. I just started walking. And halfway down the road, there was this older man that pulled up next to me in like an old car. And he rolled down the window. He pulled up next to me. And you have to remember, I'm like 4 or 5 years old. And I'm walking about a mile, a little over a mile away from my grandmother's house down the road by myself. And so this man pulls up and I got this horrific feeling about this man. I don't know why, but I had this feeling that he was going to hurt me. Something bad was going to happen. And so he's stopped and he's asking me like what my name is, where I'm going. And you know, a lot of parents would say, you know, that's a good thing. If you see some small child walking by themselves, you would want somebody to intervene. You wouldn't want, you know, some kid out on the road by themselves or whatever. But I just got this terrible feeling from this guy. And he asked me where I was going. And it was as if somebody, the same thing that happened at my aunt's house where I was like, I have to go into the woods. It was like that same voice was like, I had to lie to him. And so when he asked me, I said, I'm going to my aunt's house. And I pointed, and there was only one house on that road. The whole road from my dad's house all the way down is pretty much an empty road. It's just fields, cornfields and stuff. There's one little old lady that has a little house on that road halfway down. And we were 20 yards away from her house. And I pointed at her house and I said, I'm going to my aunt's house. And when that lie fell out of my mouth, I was like, why did I do that? I couldn't understand why I just said that. It wasn't true. And I wasn't going to my aunt's house. This woman was not my aunt. I couldn't understand why I just said it. And then he was like, well, hop in. I'll drive you over there. And, you know, we're right there. I mean, we're just about to come up to the driveway. I mean, there's absolutely zero reason for this man, for me to get in this man's car. You know, it would take longer for me to get in his car and him drive me up the driveway than it would be just to walk. Like, we're right there. And I said, no, thanks. And I immediately cut across the grass and went up the driveway. I went around to the backside of the house and he drove, stopped in the middle of the road and sat there in front of her house. I got down on my hands and knees and I was like, I need to hide. So I got down on my hands and knees and I crawled. This woman had hedges around her house. I crawled behind the hedges around the front of the house and I sat there and watched him from underneath this bush, kind of like between these two bushes underneath of him. And he sat there for a good few minutes. And then he eventually drove off real slow. And once he drove off, I got that same feeling again, like, okay, I need to keep going. And this was all very abnormal for me. My father and my grandfather are very strict. So I get this feeling that I've got to keep going. And I walk another half, probably about halfway there. Once I get there, the moment I get to where we shot BB guns, immediately that feeling of like, I have to go there, whatever, it went away. I mean, immediately. And I started to panic. I was like, oh my gosh, why did I do this? I'm going to get beat. My dad's going to beat me. My grandfather's going to beat me. Like, why did I do that? I couldn't understand why I had done this at all. It didn't make sense to me. And then all of a sudden it was like, hey, over here. I turned around and about 100 yards away, there's a cornfield. So there's a dirt road. There's a cornfield on the right. And then beyond that cornfield is a second cornfield separated by a thin row of trees. Just poking out from behind this tree is an egg-shaped or a, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say what shape it was. So from where I'm standing, it looks like a hot dog or kind of egg shaped, but I think it was a disc actually. But just from where I could see it, it didn't look like that, you know, at the time. But anyway, so I see it and I'm like, what is that thing? And so I start walking closer because there's a strange thing, it doesn't belong there. And as I get closer, I can see it better and better. It's got three legs. It's sitting on these three tripod legs. It has a door with an archway on the side of it. And then when I get a few yards away from it, I just start to black out. Like if you've ever drank too much alcohol and your memory gets like choppy. So it's like, I remember walking up to it. And then once I get close to it, it's like my memory gets really choppy. The last thing I can remember is there was a gray alien on my right-hand side. There was one on my left-hand side. I was standing, I don't know, 5 feet away from this thing. There was a stairway that went up to that arch door or that opened doorway. And then there was one gray alien at the very top of the stairs. They were taller than me. All of them were probably maybe a foot taller than I was. And then I black out. When I come to, I am in a soybean field over a mile away. So when I come to, I'm like, I don't know where I'm at. I've never been in this field before. So I'm looking around and I'm panicking and I'm like, oh my God, where am I? Like, and I start to get scared. And then I hear my grandfather's voice. And this wasn't just his voice. This was, I don't even know how many days before, but because my grandfather's a farmer, he takes us back in the woods all the time. And you know, we cut down trees and do all sorts of stuff, drive tractors and stuff. So he was driving through the field and he said to me, he said, if you ever get lost inside of a field, walk to the edge and then go around in a circle. He said, sooner or later, you're going to find a road because every farmer needs a road to bring their equipment into the field. And then he said, but don't touch the plants. He said, you don't want to hurt them. And that's how a farmer makes his livelihood. And so I'm panicking. I'm looking around. I don't know where I'm at. I'm just in the middle of this field. And then all of a sudden, it was as if somebody was recording that conversation, or as if somebody was able to record my memory of that conversation and just replay it. It was like there was an invisible person that recorded him and replayed it in my mind, verbatim. I mean, perfect copy of what he said to me. And for some reason, it calmed me down. And so I went to the edge of the field and I just started doing circles around the field. And after walking for a little bit, my cousin, I hear my cousin yell and she says, hey, and I look over and she goes, what are you doing here? And I told her, I was like, I don't know. And she was like, well, how'd you get here? And I was like, I don't know. And she was like, where are you supposed to be? And I was like, I don't know. I literally just didn't understand what was happening. And I was so small at the time that outside the field, there's this big kind of ditch. And I was so small that I couldn't get down the ditch by myself. So she climbed up the ditch, picked me up, and then walked me down the ditch and then put me down on solid ground. And then she walked me to her house and she said, told her mother, like, hey, I found him in the field. Like, I'm going to take him back to his grandmother's house. So she took me by the hand and walked down the street, across the highway, and then back to my grandmother's house. And then, you know, the whole time I was like, I'm going to get beat. Like my grandmother doesn't spank me, but when my grandfather comes home, if I do something at 9 o'clock in the morning, that she doesn't like, when he gets home, I get spanked. And then when my father comes to pick me up, I get a beating from my dad too. So if you do something wrong at my mom and pop's house, you get a double whooping. So I was terrified. My grandmother, I should also say it was like 4:30. So I left right after lunchtime. So I've got probably 4 hours of missing time from that day. The whole thing with going to my aunt's house, I was sitting down eating lunch and my grandmother and grandfather have lunch at 11 a.m. every day, or they're both deceased, but they eat at like 11 and then they eat dinner at 5 o'clock and they go to bed at like eight in the afternoon. My grandfather leaves for work at like 6 in the morning. He eats breakfast at 5:30, something like that. He leaves at 6:30. So they have a very regimented schedule. So my grandmother, it was 11 o'clock. She served me lunch and she was like, if you eat your lunch, I'll let you go to your aunt's house. So I just ate real fast and then she let me walk over there. So from like maybe 11:30 till 4:30, I have no idea what happened. You know, I just can't, you know, after seeing that UFO, I just blacked out and woke up a mile away. But she never told anybody. I was terrified when my grandfather came home. She didn't say a word. When my father came to pick me up, she never said a word. I don't know why she didn't say anything. You know, my cousin was there. Let me put it to you like this. My cousin was a witness that I was found across the highway in this field. If on any normal occasion, if anyone caught me doing that, my father, any of them, they would have whooped the heck out of me. And for some reason, it was like they acted like it never happened. It was like my grandmother didn't say anything to anybody. I just don't understand why. I don't get it. But she did say something. So my cousin brings me up. My grandmother meets us at the front door. She said, I thought you were going to your grandmother's house. She said, I thought you were going to your aunt's house. And I said, she didn't answer the door. And she said, okay, come in. It's time for dinner. And she just grabbed me by the hand and sat me down and fed me dinner. She'd never scolded me. She never yelled at me. It was the strangest thing, like absolute strangest thing. But yeah, I've had another time like that. I've had a few times where it's almost like you're being influenced. I can't even describe it. It's like you're almost like you're being controlled on some level. Like you've got to go here, and then you get there and there's a UFO. And the whole time you're going, you're like, why am I? I don't even understand why I'm doing this. It's almost like you've lost control of yourself. Like you're being influenced so heavily that you're making decisions, against your own will. Decisions that you would never make.
We've just about run out of time.
Yeah, I've had a really great time.
Yeah, and I've still got a whole load of other questions left. Maybe another time we'll have to get back to them. But thanks a lot for coming back and doing this.
No, I'm very, very grateful for you having me. Thank you.
And that was an interview with Justin Bush about his book, Violence Will Not Be Tolerated, an Alien Abduction Story. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/AlienUFOPodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. And my website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.